Live on Tape, Work in Progress, a World at Work podcast about work, life, and everything in between. With award-winning radio host Tom Alexander and Workspan's Not Safe for Work columnist Charles Epstein. Here are your hosts, Tom and Charles.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Work in Progress. My name is Tom Alexander, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend and podcast partner. It is Charles Epstein. Hey, Charles.
Hey, Tom. Today, we'll be spending some time with Dr. Solange Sharaw, yes, the founder and CEO of 8C Moneyball, whose cloud-based platform provides C-level executives with the ability to understand, monitor, calculate, and project in real time the impact of their human capital trends on business and financial outcomes, and to express the results in the format of standard financial ratios. And I should add that Solange contributed an article to August's Workspan titled "A Decision Time for Rewards Professionals: Lead, Follow, or Get Out of the Way." Dr. Solange doesn't pull any punches, Tom.
No, not at all. She does not pull any punches. And I'm hoping I can grasp all this as I live about 12 feet above sea level, Charles, but we'll see how that how that fares out. And you know, she's also, Charles, the keynote speaker at the Total Rewards Conference in Phoenix. That runs from October 4th through the 6th. She'll be speaking on the 4th, the keynote address, Accelerating Rewards Impact Through Analytics. So that should be very, very interesting.
Oh, very much so. And yes, also keynoting will be Danica Patrick. So gentlemen and gentlewomen, gentle people, start your engines.
Yes.
Yeah, very much looking forward to that. And actually, Tom, we're going to be there.
Yes, we will.
I hope that's not news to you, by the way.
No. That part, I got that memo. That memo I did get.
Yes, we're going to be podcasting from the show. So for those of you listening, stop by and say hello. But if you don't mind, please keep it to a socially responsible fist bump, as much as we like to hug you.
Yes. Come from a long line of huggers, but, gotta watch that. You know, this should be a very, very interesting conference to get out there. Very much looking forward to getting to Phoenix. We'll be back with Solange Sharaw right after these words. Stay tuned.
Let's talk about Phoenix. It's got a way of helping you to breathe a little better.
Data, the mantra of business today. It's nothing new to World at Work. It's no small feat that they've been collecting data on salary issues for its salary budget survey for more than 45 years. Think about it. 45 years. Curious to know how your company stacks up? HR execs in the know rely on World at Work's salary budget survey. Shouldn't you too? Go to worldatwork.org/salary budget survey to learn more.
The long and winding road that leads to your door. Will never disappear. I've seen that road before.
Dr. Solange Sharaw is a human capital expert with 25 plus years of experience as consultant, practice leader, top corporate executive, and board director across all industry sectors. Solange is the founder and CEO of HC Moneyball, whose cloud-based platform provides C-level executives with the ability to understand, monitor, calculate, and project in real time the impact of their human capital trends on business and financial outcomes, and to express the results in the format of standard financial ratios. Workspan's August issue includes her article, Decision Time for Rewards Professionals: Lead, Follow, or Get Out of the Way, which is mandatory reading. Solange joins us today from New York City. Solange, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me in this program today.
Well, it's great to have you. Please say hi to my podcast partner, Charles Epstein.
Hi, Charles. How are you?
Hey, Solange. How's New York City these days?
Drying out.
Good. Good. Yeah, we all saw the pictures of the water cascading and all those subway stops. My goodness, I've never seen anything quite like it.
I was happy to be at home and dry.
Yes. Yep. Yes. 15 stories up, I believe you said.
Yep.
Yeah, can't reach you there. You know, by the way, I met Solange on a previous webcast on People Analytics, and she promised to save her best stuff for us, Tom. We will hold you to that promise, Solange.
Always. I'm always better the day that I'm doing something.
Excellent. Excellent. But you are very good. So you did set that bar quite high. So we shall see. Now, seriously, again, thanks so much for joining us today and for taking the time. H.E. Moneyball, I assume from the Michael Lewis book?
Yep. That's exactly the idea.
I'm amazed the name was available. It's great.
Yeah, Michael was very kind in that he didn't copyright or trademark Moneyball as a term. And so everybody has the chance to use it. And when we built the company a few years ago, we wanted to combine the idea of evidence-based data-driven decision-making, which is what Moneyball stands for, with human capital and usher in this new era of looking at human capital through an analytic lens.
Yeah, no, it's great because Moneyball kind of has become a verb. Let's Moneyball it. You know, so you're able to adopt it and incorporate it and use it to those ends. So that's terrific. You know, I see in going over your LinkedIn stuff that as an undergraduate, you majored in political economy. Well, I can see the underlying similarities. When and why did you turn from political economy to human capital management?
Oh, that's a long and winding road for any Beatles fans out there.
Indeed.
I didn't grow up wanting to be a human capital person back then we used to call it personnel, if you remember way back then.
Sure.
Again, it was sort of a series of unexplainable and unexpected events that brought me to this point in time. None of which I regret. Maybe a good story, short story, would be to tell you about who my professor was at Cornell when I did my MBA program at the Johnson School. I was not interested in human resources or human capital at all. My MBA is in accounting and finance with a minor in taxation, which is, you know, the perfect background for somebody in HR, especially in the 80s. I only took one class that was in the human capital space at Columbia, and it was called Organizational Behavior. And it was taught by a guy named Richard Thaler.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Now it makes sense.
Now it makes sense. So my only HR class was taught by a professor who won the Nobel Prize in behavioral economics.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so that was sort of my introduction into HR. And then I graduated in 1988, right after the 87 market crash. My only non-financial services offer was with the Hay Group. And, you know, I was an accounting major, so I knew that companies use the LIFO method of personnel management, last in, first out. And I didn't want to be on the chopping block if I took a job in financial services. So I hung out in consulting for a year. That was my plan. I'll just take this consulting job and wait for the financial services industry to sort of, you know, level off. And then I'll go back into corporate finance. That's what I wanted to do.
Oh, and I see.
What happened is I fell in love with consulting, the whole process of consulting where you have to sort of be a detective and figure out what the root problem was and then, you know, bring a solution to bear and then work out whether or not that solution will work. That sort of advisory subject matter expert relationship that you have with clients really suited me. It so happened it was in human resources. So I basically learned HR as somebody that didn't have a background in it. And my pathway took me to executive compensation so that I could really use my accounting and finance expertise. And I did that for many years and then ended up as a chief human resources officer and always brought this sort of lens, this framework of financial discipline and financial rigor to the HR function. So for example, back in the early 2000s, I was the chief human resources officer for a financial services company, and I turned my HR department into a profit center. And that was like unheard of. Who thinks of taking an HR function that is purely a cost center and turning it into a profit center? And that's what I did, and managed the HR function using the kind of rigor that we're going to be talking about today. Right. So I've been doing this for, well, when I got to Arthur Andersen in 1996, we started looking at quantifying the impact of human capital management. So you do the math, almost 30 years, 25
yeah,
years.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It was a long and winding road, but now, you know, since then it's been kind of a linear path to HC Moneyball in a sense. And I tell you, how great is it to be able to invoke Professor Thaler, a Nobel laureate, as being such a linchpin in your career trajectory? That's pretty neat. My other thought there, it just sort of occurs to me, you know, you're in the business of quantifying, doing the ROI on human capital management, I guess is one way of putting it. It would be kind of interesting if you take a guy, you know, as influential as Professor Thaler, and over the years, how many people like you he's influenced and what they've gone on to accomplish. If you can quantify that, that would be kind of interesting.
That could be kind of interesting. Well, in the academic community, we actually have a way of looking at it. It's how many times your article is being cited by other researchers. So, and what they, you know, what we learned in the PhD program is that you stand on the shoulders of others. Every researcher actually forwards that, you know, contributes to forwarding new thoughts and ideas, but you don't come up with it by yourself. You come up with it based on who studied that topic in the past. So
Well, I guess there's intellectual capital and the other type, but yes, absolutely.
Exactly. And that's a good way of thinking about it, because, you know, human capital has never been thought of as capital, right?
Right.
Like financial capital, intellectual capital. Now we have human capital.
Exactly.
Yeah. On the HC Moneyball website, you state people costs, which can be upwards of 40 to 75% of an organization's revenues, are often viewed as intangible and difficult to quantify. First, if you wouldn't mind, give us in broad strokes how HC Moneyball goes about surfacing, then quantifying these costs. Then we'll get in a little bit into how you do it through the HC Metrics platform.
Sure. So that 40 to 75% is sort of a rough estimation. In fact, we're working with a company now where their human capital costs are only about 5% of total expenses. And yet they still understand the value of human capital driving financial outcomes. For banks and for healthcare, you know, human capital is really a way of delivering those services that organizations are providing. So I just did in the magazine, we looked at Bank of America, right? And we profile their experience around human capital and how that drives economic value creation. And for Bank of America, they spend about 78% of their non-interest expense, right? Because they're a bank, they have a whole category of expenses that have to do with money. But the non-financial expenses, those that are focused on operating costs, 78% of their total expense goes to people. And so when you have that much of your expense going to people, it's very important to measure, monitor, and leverage that expense to driving economic or financial outcomes for the organization. So the more you spend on people, the bigger the opportunity organizations have to actually enhance their organization's performance through people. And that's why it's important. It's not really a sunk cost anymore, which is how we used to think about human capital, right? It's like that thing over there that we have to invest in, that we have to put money to, which is our people. but we don't ever expect any type of financial return from it. That's why it's considered a sunk cost.
Some people hearing this may immediately think that one way to do that is through automation, which could, in fact, reduce your headcount and give you a perhaps greater ROI on the people there. How would you respond to that?
Well, I'm so happy you said that, because that is the first thing that people think about.
And of course.
So there's a real basic fundamental algorithm that all companies use. I don't care how big or how small the company is. But the algorithm is revenues minus expense generate profit, right? And all companies are in the business of enhancing profit. They either do that by enhancing their revenues or by reducing their expense or a combination of those two. Hopefully your revenues are bigger than your expenses and your profit making. So what the first instinct is if I want to improve my profitability, I better cut my expense. Well, what's the easy expense to cut is people. And
particularly like as with the bank, 78% of it goes to your people.
Right. But there's an inherent flaw in that thinking. It's like saying, well, I have this car and one of my expenses is gas. So I'm going to cut my gas expense and not put any gas in the car. And then when I get in the car, I'm disappointed that it's not going to take me to my destination. It's because you've cut the wrong expense or you've mismanaged that expense. You know, another way to think about it is they always say, you know, you better take care of your car, right? You take it for a tune-up, right? And make sure that it's operating well, because that's how you improve gas efficiency. If you let your car run down, then you don't have gas, you know, you don't have an efficient machine. And so it costs you more to run it. It's the same sort of idea with organizations. You don't want to cut your people. You want to make sure that your people are working efficiently. And that's what happens. The financial people say, oh, let's cut people expense. Let's just do a reduction in force. That'll help our productivity. But what they're doing is they're actually eliminating their source of economic value creation for the company. And so what at the conference board, we did this research. And what we found was that organizations that actually enhance their investment in people actually do better than companies that do reduction in force just to save money. So you have to think of it differently. You can't just say, okay, let's cut this expense. When you're cutting the expense, you're cutting your ability to actually generate value for the organization. So you might be thinking, oh, I'll cut my expense and enhance my profitability, but you're also impacting your ability to generate revenue, because every employee is productive in that sense, right?
Sure. Yeah. No, so, I'm glad you answered that. And I'm glad I asked that question, because that is the natural question that emerges from that kind of conversation. You know,
And the natural follow-on is you have to be smart about how you manage your human capital expense or your human capital investment. Mm-hmm. And the new thinking is we want to measure a return on that investment.
Right, which nicely gets us into HC Metrics, the cloud-based computing platform that, to use the language from your site, transforms existing HR-related data into standardized metrics so CEOs and CFOs can fully understand, monitor, calculate, and predict the impact of human capital investments on financial outcomes. Tell us how this works, particularly as it relates to the conversation we're having.
Yeah. So one of the things that the platform does that no other platform right now is doing, I can't say that it'll never do that because we love competition, is our platform allows the user to mix and match information that's generated from their human capital data and their financial data. So right now, what we see in the world is we've got a bunch of ERP systems that are in the financial area that will calculate all sorts of metrics and let you draw graphs and understand the return on investment on all things financial. And we've got talent management systems like Workday and SAP and Oracle that help organizations understand their human capital performance, but we don't have a platform that allows you to mix and match that data so that you can actually correlate your human capital performance and financial outcomes. And that's what our platform does. You ask, you know, where do we get the data? The data already exists in the organization. We don't ask companies to create data. We ask companies to curate existing data sources and upload it into our platform so that they have a new lens, a new, I call it the sandbox. They have a new place to play with information to understand how human capital drives corporate financial outcomes. And we get that data from financial sources. So the best place to look is your pre-closing trial balance sheets, where you've got every expense category listed, and you take all the HR-related expenses that the organization, and your HRIS system, where you have all your information about employees, their hire date, their length of service, their level, their pay, their, you know, I-9 identification, right? And if you're a company with more than 100 employees, you probably have every job categorized by an EEO category. So all that data is there. What we're doing is we're bringing it together in a platform that easily allows the user, just through drag and drops, you drag revenue into the graph, you drag headcount into the graph, and it draws it automatically. And you can see whether or not these things are moving together or moving in opposite directions. And that gives you some insights about where to further unpack your issues around HCROI or any program performance, right? Like retention, attrition, training and development, mobility and advancement, recruitment success. So we give you a window. I often say it's like putting the organization through an MRI machine. You can see the inner workings of it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. That's really interesting, Solange.
Our guest is Dr. Solange Sharah, a human capital expert and the founder of and CEO of HC Moneyball. Solange, I know that you strongly believe the data and financial literacy needs to be a core human capital capability for rewards professionals. But while the HC Metrics platform is designed to make these matters more intelligible, I'm sure there are members of our audience who couldn't entirely follow some of the intricacies or nuances of your explanation of human capital ratios, among other things that you mentioned. What does HC Moneyball do to cover that literacy gap that may still remain?
So we're providing a couple of things. One is the facility for any user. And when I say user, this is not employee self-serve or a manager self-serve system. So when we talk about user, we talk about the CFO, the CHRO, the data analyst within those two functions. Maybe even a board director will want an account so that they can track and monitor their organization's performance. So what we allow the user to do, again, is to get some insights on the relationship between human capital performance and corporate financial performance. And for board directors in the area of ESG, we help create some insights on the S part, on the social part of it.
Yeah.
So what does your demographic look like? What are your employees staying with you? What impact do you have on their job satisfaction? So we're helping organizations actually turn on the light in the human capital room to figure out what's going on there, and then to correlate that to corporate financial outcomes. And I keep saying this, you know, corporate financial outcomes. We no longer manage just to profitability. We have to manage to other constituents, right? The new definition of the corporation includes employees. So how are we treating and managing our employees? What about our communities, right? And like in the Bank of America experience, we spoke to their deputy general counsel, and he told us something really, really fascinating, which is in the United States, Bank of America touches one out of every two people in this country, which is sort of like mind-blowing. Between employment, financial products, credit cards, right? They say that they touch 50% of Americans. And when you have that kind of impact, you want to make sure that you're measuring and monitoring and having a positive impact on the community. Yeah. Strategic partners, vendors, right? For supply chain issues. Customers, right? So I'm naming all of the constituents. That's all part of the S of ESG, environmental social governance. So what we're doing is we're helping create insights. I guess maybe the best way to think about it is our platform allows you to understand your performance, your corporate performance, based on best evidence, not best practice, right? And I think that concept of best practice is sort of going away, although people are still saying, well, what's everybody else doing? Don't worry about what everybody else is doing. Worry about what you're doing, but based on evidence, based on data.
Yeah, yeah. I always thought that best practices was a bit overdone. The time has come. I think that's a real sensible, smart approach. I'm starting to see more and more people kicking best practices to the curb. And I think it's a good development. Another one of your areas of expertise is mergers and acquisitions, particularly post transaction integration. I know this is a very general question, but what in your view of the signs you should look for in a potential acquisition that looks like it will be successful from a people integration and talent retention standpoint? Or conversely, what do you look for where it might not be successful?
So I love this question. And I've been doing transaction advisory support work, M&A due diligence work, for at least 25 years. And I've done probably close to 70 deals in my life. And the traditional view of human capital has been reflected in the way due diligence has been done, which is really a check-the-box approach. We're going to verify and validate the cost associated with human capital in an organization without actually ever understanding the quality of the employees that you're getting. So we call it Q of EE, quality of employees. So, you know, in human resources, we abbreviate employees as EE. And we do it in parallel to the financial guys that are looking for the Q of E, which is the quality of earnings. And so when we do these efforts in parallel, we can actually learn something about the quality of the workforce and the sustainability of that workforce to support the projected or pro forma financial performance of the organization. So the financial guys do a great job projecting forward the value of a company, right? But they don't look at whether or not the internal engine of the organization and creating that value is aligned. And so, you know, that old quote by Einstein that says doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is insanity.
Sure.
That's what the M&A guys do. They keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. We're introducing a new way of doing human capital due diligence, and hopefully it'll get, you know, I'm doing more and more of this work, so it's sort of catching on. And now that the SEC has said that human capital is not a sunk cost or an expense, but an investment in human capital, it's changing the sort of the orientation of thinking about human capital as an input into the business model. But hopefully we won't see 70 to 80% of M&A transactions not meeting their financial goals, because we're actually looking at the power of human capital to drive economic value outcomes, right, economic value creation differently. So how do I do that? I start with the top line indicators, HCROI, HCVA, look at that over time. I look at productivity. I look at expense ratio. I look at things like attrition in the organization. So I just did a due diligence with an organization. The financial guys had finished their work and then they called me in. And the financial guys looked at attrition and said, compared beginning of year headcount to end of year headcount, or end of year headcount to the beginning of year headcount, and basically said, okay, we started off with, you know, 800 employees and we ended up with 790 employees. So they basically didn't have attrition. But during the year, month by month, they had a lot of turnover. And in fact, their turnover was like 77%. And that 77% of attrition had like a $12 million price tag. And none of the financial guys saw that because they don't look at it that way. They don't value, right, productivity and, you know, look at the costs associated with attrition or with, you know, low engagement. And it changed the deal value because all of a sudden they realized, oh my God, 77% attrition and it cost us $12 million. And it actually, when you don't have people in open jobs, it costs you productivity. So right. It costs about $16 million in productivity.
Right. Yeah. No.
It's a different way to think about it and inform. We're about insights so that you can make better decisions.
Right. No, for sure. And by the way, when you use terms like sunk cost, your Richard Thaler is showing, just so you know, Solange.
Oh my God, maybe I should cover it up a little bit.
Yeah, no. I think that's the kind of thing you want to expose to the world. So thank you very much.
Solange, one more question. You're also an expert in facilitating collaboration and cooperation among various business stakeholders. Has this become more of a challenge in today's business environment where people tend to be more spread out than ever before, which may well become a permanent way that we do business?
Yeah. I was actually just having a conversation on the phone with one of my colleagues about the new form of, you know, working together. Really interesting conversation because even though only about 10% of American companies had a work from home policy that allowed employees to work remotely. And now, you know, with COVID, we've got 80 or 90% of American companies having permanent work from home policies. His observation was that that people who used to work from home, who weren't co-located with their colleagues, found that they were actually at an advantage because of COVID, because now everybody was working from home. And instead of, you know, being in a conference room with 10 people and then two people on the phone, everybody was on Zoom. So they felt that it sort of leveled the playing field. And I think that that is an interesting place to start, is that we've got a level playing field in terms of exposure and opportunity and collaboration. And we need to train our managers going forward how to actually integrate a remote workforce into their management practices. So I think, you know, we've sort of, you know, erase the slate and we can start fresh. The important thing is to understand what it takes to create a high performing team. And my research, my PhD research was focused on this. And there's basically three chunky aspects to it. Team dynamic quality, which is the interaction between people, the quality of their interaction, regardless of whether or not they're remote or co-located. You still need to focus on how people communicate and relate to one another. The second big chunky aspect is the team agreeableness. So it's sort of the underlying aspects of team, which include things like trust. So it's not the interaction, it's the foundational part of it. Trust, morality, modesty, right? So we actually have some type of behavioral and ethical underpinnings of team. And then the third is the ability for teams to actually produce outcomes. And we need to measure and monitor those, including things like innovation and synergy, things like, you know, keeping deadlines, quality standards. And if we keep in mind team dynamic quality, team agreeableness, or the foundational, you know, glue that keeps things together, and then the focus on producing outcomes, I don't think it makes a difference if you're co-located or you're remote working. you focus on the right things to get things done.
Solange, before we let you go, we know you have a book coming out. First of all, if you would, perhaps you can give our listeners a sneak preview and let us know when it's coming out.
Yeah, really excited. My co-author, Stella LePouchard, and I just finished the manuscript. The book is called Humanizing Human Capital, Investing in Your People for Optimal Business Returns. Hopefully it'll be out in the spring of this coming year. And, you know, some top line, you know, concepts about the book. We're trying to reframe traditional HR practices into future forward strategies. So we've had a big disruptive event. Here's the time to actually look at your internal data, to look at processes, HR processes within your organization, and align them to future forward approaches to working. We want to shift decision-making about people and people programs from a gut sense, which is how a lot of HR people operate, to an evidence-based approach. So let's move away from best practices. Let's move to best evidence and use data to inform our decision-making around human capital and human capital programs. The book covers approaches to quantify and manage human capital to future-proof financial outcomes, financial returns. So here we're marrying human capital and corporate financial outcomes in one book. And we actually give you a step-by-step process to help you address the changes in work and the workforce landscape, because we're seeing a lot of demographic shifts and workforce shifts. And I think lots of things are exciting things are going to happen in the future, like virtual reality work places. So yeah. Facebook just introduced a technology that's like the most basic fundamental platform. I think that what we've learned in these last 18 months is that there's a way to work effectively, efficiently from your home and with the new platform to have the experience and sensation of being co-located. And I think that in the next 5 years, we're all going to be moving to a virtual work environment.
That sounds absolutely great. And by the way, Tom's young son is a screenwriter. So if you're looking to adapt this to the screen, he's your guy. And if they did Moneyball, if they moved Moneyball to the screen, surely they can do this with your book, Solange.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that it lends itself to a feature film, but, you know.
We'll take a meeting.
I like that. None of us are in Hollywood, but let's do lunch.
Let's do lunch. Virtually, at least.
Always. Solange, we really do appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I had a great, great time.
Our guest today was Dr. Solange Sharaw, a human capital expert and founder and CEO of HC Moneyball. Solange spoke to us today from New York City. This is Work in Progress. Back in a moment.
Lead me to your
data, the mantra of business today. It's nothing new to World at Work. It's no small feat that they've been collecting data on salary issues for its salary budget survey for more than 45 years. Think about it, 45 years. Curious to know how your company stacks up? HR execs in the know rely on World at Work's salary budget survey. Shouldn't you too? Go to worldatwork.org/salarybudgetsurvey to learn more.
Wrapping things up now on Work in Progress, along with Charles Epstein, I'm Tom Alexander. Solange Sharaw, Charles, wow, that was very, very interesting, and you know, really looking forward to seeing her at the conference as well.
Yeah, if that's any indication, I think it's going to be a real fun keynote. She's got a lot to say, and she says it in just such a lively, engaging manner. So people are going to be in for a treat, as are we. I have to say, yeah, I'm very impressed they're able to grab the name Moneyball. It's a great way of quickly conveying what they do, applying metrics to human performance, which, you know, typically has been viewed as intangible and difficult to quantify. And now, using their platform, CEOs, CFOs can use standardized metrics to understand and predict the impact of their investments in their people, their human resources. So, you know, that's a great advance and a great thing. And Tom, I have to say, there actually have been a couple of people on the podcast talking about the need to promote financial literacy among the workforce, among HR. And obviously what Solange and her group are doing is promoting data and financial literacy among human capital management folks, which is sorely needed. So that's really good work that they're doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely it is. And if you want to learn more, you can go online and check out all the information on the keynote speakers, as well as the entire Total Rewards Conference. And that's at worldatwork.org.
A couple other things. It's just chock-a-block full of info on mergers and acquisitions, particularly the post-transaction integration, which I'm particularly fascinated with, having worked with several companies who've gone through those acquisitions, who've been the acquiring company, and they become very, very good at integrating and smoothing out the workflows and the workforces and the cultures. And it's no easy task, but obviously the Solange and our group have become quite expert at that. And of course, talking about collaboration in today's business environment, which is obviously very important, particularly with people working all over the place. And Tom, we're looking forward to her book. When did she say it's going to be out? I think in the spring.
I believe in the spring. Yes. Early spring is the target. So we'll certainly update everybody when that day draws closer.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have her back on for round two.
Yes, that would be great. That'd be great. Well, we thank Solange Sharaf for her appearance today on the show. For Charles Epstein, I'm Tom Alexander. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Work in Progress. So long, everybody.
This has been Work in Progress, a World at Work podcast about work, life, and everything in between, with award-winning radio host Tom Alexander and Workspan's Not Safe for Work columnist Charles Epstein. For more, visit worldatwork.org/workinprogress. That's worldatwork.org/workinprogress. Join us next week for another edition of Work in Progress.